here bringing you a bank holiday sized bumper bucket of Barnum bizarre bad bulletin news delivered straight into your little shell like. Drop the paintbrush, put down the credit card, give the kids a tenner and tell the garden centre you have plans for the next 20 minutes. Are you sitting comfortably? Well, I'm beginning anyway. Let's begin with some bad religion news as we hop on an imaginary ferry to Belgium. And it seems burkas won't be joining chocolate, waffles and lace as one of the things the country has in abundance. It looks like the first European ban on the wearing of the Islamic burqa in public is poised to come into force there, where a parliamentary vote on a bill which bans face coverings received almost unanimous cross-party support from the members of the Belgian House of Representatives this week. The Belgian bill outlaws any clothing that partially or fully covers the face and is worn in public, with a fine of up to €25 and in theory up to 7 days in prison for anyone flouting the law, although it is unlikely the sentences would be imposed. Builders, nurses or other professionals who might need to cover their faces have been exempted from the bill. However, it won't become law till the Senate give it their stamp of approval after general elections in June. Dennis de Carm, a Belgian Liberal Party MP, voicing the reasons why many disagree with the burqa and hoping other European countries follow suit, said, "We are the first country to break through the chain that has kept countless women enslaved." And in a country where the varied languages and standpoints of the politicians famously lead them to pretty much never agree in anything, it's notable that they all appear to think exactly the same way and agree when it comes to their feelings on the burqa's threat to female dignity and Western values. It's been quoted that they view it as an important declaration that certain Western values, including female equality, are not consistent with the more extreme forms of Islam. Well, I'd go a little further and say that Western values and female equality are not consistent with any form of Islam, full stop. I mean, the burqa isn't the face covering of extremists. It's the face covering demanded of its women by Islam. And this myth that somehow there is an extreme and moderate version of Islam that allows the cherry picking of bits and bobs of the faith to its followers is allowing them status as moderate, extreme or just plain nuts. It's really beginning to annoy. Whether it's worn by Zafira the suicide bomber on her way to off a few infidels, or Bushra on her way to Asda to buy a few groceries, the reasons it's worn remain the same. Not extreme or moderate, just what Islam demands. It demands control and conformity to its every word with no exceptions allowed. And that demand is why it should be banned. It allows for no communication, no empathy, and it's deeply impractical. It's a passive-aggressive statement, a rejection of the community, not a sign of being part of anything other than oppressive male-dominated religious rubbish. The person wearing it is signalling that either she, or more likely the men in her life and her religion, demands her to remain apart from society. It implies that wearers, and once again more pointedly the male enforcers, believe somehow either men may become suddenly dangerously lusty potential rapists if they see their face and instantly be unable to deny their apparently uncontrollable urges. It doesn't just affect the person wearing a burqa, it affects those around them, who may feel shunned or simply totally unable to interact in any meaningful established way. And with tattoos, face piercings, hoodies, mohawks and even shades, you can still smile to show that you're a friend. To show that you agree or you disagree, to show your love or hate of something, laugh or cry. With a burqa, you're stripped of facial prompts and expression to show the millions of thoughts and feelings the face allows. If that's not cruel, if that's not isolating, if that's not oppressive and constricting, then nothing is. But that's exactly what it is supposed to do, and what Islam demands it does. It is supposed to isolate, oppress, constrict and remove, and so does a religion that demands these things also. Is that ever right? Should that ever be considered incorrigible or acceptable? Amnesty International condemned the move as an attack on religious freedom. Philippe Hensman of Amnesty Belgium said it had been pushed through without a proper national debate. He also said it's not clear that it's in line with the Belgian constitution and with international human rights conventions. But for me, I can't see how a burqa enhances a woman's human rights, Unless you're talking about a right to choose to allow ourselves to be controlled by an ancient practice she's been convinced and indoctrinated into thinking somehow is a sign of expression of her own identity or faith. What she does, shows, expresses and says can do that for her. This, well, this just denies her the full ability to do that. Back over to the UK now for the next bit of bad religion news. You may have already been following the case of Gary McFarlane, a Christian relationship counsellor who was sacked after refusing to offer sex therapy sessions to homosexual couples because it was against his beliefs. McFarlane's legal challenge to his dismissal has this week been dismissed itself by Lord Justice Laws, who ruled that while everyone had the right to hold religious beliefs, those beliefs themselves had no standing under the law. A ruling that is long overdue and opens up a whole can of worms that long needed exposure to the daylight. Lord Justice Laws condemned any attempt to protect believers who take a stand on matters of conscience under the law as irrational and capricious. He claimed that doing so could set Britain on the road to a theocracy and religious rule. And that's the last thing we need or want. It's so refreshing to hear a Lord Justice talk pure, unadulterated sense. I could listen to this guy all day. Justice Law, tell us more. These practices by believers are subjective, with no basis in fact. Couldn't agree more. Any more thoughts on the matter whilst you're on a roll, Justice Law? In the eye of everyone save the believer, religious faith is necessarily subjective, being incommunicable by any kind of proof or evidence, he told the court. He insisted that no religious belief itself could be protected under the law, however long its tradition, however rich its culture. Amen to that, if you pardon the obvious pun. Gary McFarlane, 48, challenged his dismissal at the Court of Appeal, arguing that forcing him to go against what he sees as the Bible's teachings represented religious discrimination. Of course, his discrimination against homosexual couples was entirely fine, according to him, because the Bible says it so. What a crock of caca. So if he heads out and slaughters a few heathens, all in the name of God, he expects us to just say, no problem, just clean up after, because it was his belief in the Bible and its teachings that made him do the deed? Get real, Gary. This kind of defence is nuts, and it has no place ever in a court of law. Your beliefs are just that, beliefs based on no evidence. They have no effect on whether or not your actions under that belief are held as illegal or not. Pointing to the sky and saying, he says it's okay, just doesn't cut it. You're going to be amazed when you hear where the next highly unsuspected comment or support for Gary came from. Not. Lord Carey, the former Archbishop of Canterbury, wrote to the judge warning of a tide of discrimination against Christians that threatened civil unrest. Oh please, civil unrest. They can't even make their way down to the pews of a Sunday to support their religion these days, never mind don a baseball bat and take to the streets. There isn't a tide of discrimination against Christians. There is, instead, a tide of support for common sense, rational thinking, and an end to this kind of nonsense infecting in any way the legal system. Lord Carey called for the Lord Chief Justice to set up a separate panel of 5 judges with proven sensitivity to religious feelings to hear the appeal and other similar cases in the future. Proven sensitivity. You mean you want a panel of judges with a proven bias to hear an appeal that should be utterly unbiased in its findings by law? You, Lord Carey, are clearly nuts. The man refused to do his job. A job that says he should provide relationship counselling to anyone who requires it, without bias or discrimination, because that is what he's being paid to do. He's not a religious counsellor. He's not employed to uphold or enforce his religious beliefs on others. Nor should his religious beliefs be a get-out clause for him to refuse to do his job. Able to be pulled out like some get-out-of-work card whenever he feels he can't bring himself to step into the 21st century and smell the enlightened coffee. Mr. McFarlane said that his treatment was, without a doubt, an example of Christians being persecuted in modern Britain. This is a sad day for our society, which I believe is on a slippery slope in terms of balancing competing interests, he said. I represent the Christian faith, but I suggest that all other faiths will be concerned about this judgment. There isn't a discrimination towards the religious in the workplace. They are enforcing their own discrimination by demanding their beliefs should be pandered to in the workplace. That's workplace, folks, not temple, church or chapel. It's not persecution, it's simply saying there is no legally recognised valid reason why, under the terms of your contract, you can refuse to work with or for a homosexual person. If there was a belief get out, he'd be left only able to work with himself and anyone else as bigoted, prejudiced and biased as he is. What employer is going to agree to that, apart from maybe the church itself? I'm sorry, I can't fit the shower because I think its owner is an adulterer. Nah, sorry, I can't mow your lawn because I'm sure I heard you say you had a bacon sarnie for breakfast. No can do with the counselling today because in the eyes of my God, you should be condemned to hell. Have a nice day. It's ridiculous. Religion, any religion, should not have an influence in a court of law. The law can have enough inconsistencies and contradictions to deal with. It needs no further interference from religion or the irrational beliefs of its followers. On to some bad homeopathy news, with a royal flavour no less. Prince Charles has long been a supporter of and campaigner for the use of various complementary medicines, including homeopathy, and over 30 years has frequently been vocal in his beliefs that these therapies and potions are not only beneficial, but should be used and available on the NHS. Yep, old Charlie feels that they are so beneficial, he even set up the Trustees of the Prince's Foundation for Integrated Health Foundation, catchy, in 1993, with the aim of raising the profile of alternative medicine within the NHS funded by profits from the Prince's commercial ventures, including the Duchy Originals Organic Food Company and the shop in his Highgrove estate in Gloucestershire, receiving also nearly £1 million in grants from the government too. Well, that particular royal bubble of belief-led nonsense has burst this week, as it was announced that the organisation was closing after 17 years with immediate effect due to a massive fraud at the charity involving hundreds of thousands of pounds. A former senior foundation official was arrested on suspicion of fraud and money laundering following a police investigation into the disappearance of £300,000 discovered after the charity's auditors questioned some transactions in the 2008-2009 accounts. The charity missed the deadline for filing the required documents to Companies House and had already incurred a £750 fine over the delay. In a statement, the trustees said the closure had been planned for many months but had been brought forward as a result of the fraud investigation. Yet a huge fraudulent scandal kinda would have that effect, wouldn't it? Shame it wasn't the fraudulent scandal that many of the therapies and potions they encouraged, offered and supported have no real proof or evidence to support them and continue to lead many desperate for a cure subscribers to waste what little money, time and hope they have on them. The trustees instead claim the main reason for the closure are that the task of the foundation has been achieved with an acceptance by the government of the need for regulation of the main therapies. However, no date for closure has been set. On April 1, 2010, the Secretary of State for Health announced plans to introduce statutory regulation for herbalists and to consider the equivalent for acupuncture. The trustees believe that the best way of prompting integrated healthcare in the future is through the networks of specialist practitioners which the charity has helped to establish. Well, regulation may well be welcome, but what about the criticism they have rightly had levied at them for all these years? No mention of that. Let me assist them in remembering. In 2006, a group of 13 leading scientists wrote to all 476 NHS trusts calling for an end to free complementary medicine on the NHS. The group was sharply critical of a guide to complementary therapy produced by the foundation and of the Smallwood report commissioned by the Prince in 2005, which suggested that wider use of therapies such as homeopathy could save the NHS money. Save money. What about saving lives? Homeopathy cannot and has never been proven to do that, or pretty much anything else with its sugar pills and endless water waffling claims. To promote something that has not been proven scientifically to be of benefit or use seems far greater a fraud than the missing 300,000, to be honest. The whole setup always smacked to me of just another way for Prince Charles to indulge his bizarre and mumbo-jumbo friendly ideas of healthcare to a willing audience influenced further by his standing and title, as if somehow that made the claims more acceptable, valid or evidenced as real. an example of which was the Prince's Dutchy Herbals Detox Tincture, a food supplement combining artichoke and dandelion, which promised to rid the body of toxins while aiding digestion. Edzard Ernst, Professor of Complementary Medicine at the University of Exeter and a persistent critic of the foundation, said it was based on notions which were implausible, unproven and dangerous. It is implied that we can all overindulge a bit and put it all right with detox tincture. It is encouragement of an unhealthy lifestyle. All the people I have talked to see it is the sense that you can get rid of your own bad habits in that way, says Ernst. Ernst recently wrote a piece in The Independent on the subject of the foundation, its demise and Prince Charles' beliefs, says, "The Foundation for Integrated Health is closing. Should we be sad? I don't think so. During recent years, this organisation seems to have broken charity regulations by becoming a tool for Prince Charles to implement his often bizarre ideas regarding healthcare. He seems to think that the nation should be force-fed an alternative medicine today, while research into these treatments might be conducted at some time in the future. I, on the other hand, have often pointed out that research has to come first. It should sort out the wheat from the chaff, and subsequently we might consider integrating these treatments that demonstrably generate more good than harm. I therefore think that the FIH has become a lobby group for unproven and disproven treatments populated by sycophants." Well, he doesn't mince his words, thankfully. And he goes on to say, "I hope that after the demise of the FIH, the discussion about alternative medicine in the UK can once more become rational. I also hope that Prince Charles has the greatness of selecting advisers who actually advise rather than yes-men who are hoping to see their names on the next honours list. If they advise him properly, they ought to remind him that in healthcare, evidence is paramount." That last sentence is the crux of any matter where people's health and lives are at stake for me. Evidence is paramount. Anything else is just an unsupported claim. Maybe Chuck will take heed of Ernst's warning. Then again, maybe not. 30 years of belief isn't easy to reverse. On to the bad psychic section of this bulletin, and we have a bumper bank holiday selection to draw from this week. Let's start with a particularly sad and disturbing tale of a psychic male scammer whose increasingly nasty letters to an elderly woman demanding cash for his warbling bull or terrible consequences if she didn't made her feel like she wanted to commit suicide. She was so afraid of what might happen. Samantha Steele, 51, battles with depression and believes she had been targeted as a vulnerable person with the letters sent by a psychic in the Netherlands calling himself Peter Wagner. The most recent letter was delivered on April the 12th and said something extremely nasty would happen to Miss Steele if she did not send off £29 plus £3 posting and packaging for the psychic's help. Okay, before I go on, there will be some people out there saying, how could she have been driven to feeling suicidal by this rubbish? Surely she's overreacting and it should simply have been binned and moved on. Well, those of you safe in your smug superiority, good health and security should get right off that particular little train of thought at the first station. There are hundreds of people in this country and most other countries who are alone, ill, elderly, isolated with no support work, and who may have lessened abilities for any number of reasons to apply perspective or rational thought to something that is to them so threatening, upsetting and real in its urgency and demanding tone. What you or I may dismiss as rubbish and no danger may be what another less fortunate sees as a real danger, threat or worry. And it's that which these sick fraudsters and mail scammers see as their biggest friend. All too often people tend to smugly comment on the victim's gullibility rather than unleash their scorn on the fraudster's abuse of that. The letter read, "You must do something. After the 9th of May 2010, it will be too late for me to be able to help you. I don't like to be the bearer of bad news, but it's only because I know I can help you that I'm writing to you. If I don't intervene in your behalf very soon, the person who's trying to do you harm may very well succeed before 15 days are up. I feel it clearly because of jealousy that person is planning to do something terrible to you, something extremely nasty, something I don't like at all." Yeah, to a 51-year-old woman alone, suffering from depression and the isolation and insecurities that can bring, the letter has far more meaning and power suddenly to frighten than it might in other circumstances. Thankfully, Miss Steele had a care worker and neighbours who were able to put her fears to rest and advise her. Many aren't so lucky. A spokesperson for Miss Steele's local trading standard says, Trading Standards are aware of this type of scheme and are urging consumers always to be careful if mail arrives out of the blue and asks you to send money to someone you've never heard of. If you respond, you're more than likely to be bombarded by even more mail of this kind. The clairvoyant type of scheme is especially unpleasant, as it can contain threats of bad luck and a deadline to reply, which should of course be ignored and the letter thrown in the bin. Anyone out there listening who knows someone, or who perhaps even themselves has been swayed even for a second by this kind of letter, should know one thing right now and never forget it. These scams are the work of nothing more than out-and-out con merchants, with not even a shred of moral or sympathetic leaning to get in the way of their desire to make as much money as they can in whatever way they can. As such, they should never be pandered to, and never should anyone send them even a penny. The claims they make of terrible things happening exist only in the paper they are written on, and the head of the reader, and should be taken as nothing more than what they are. The twisted and groundless impotent claims of a fraudulent criminal who has no power, ability or foresight that can in any way cause them or their claims to harm you or come to fruition. For more information and a cautionary warning tale, head to www.thinkjessica.com, a website set up by the family of a victim of such scams. And remember, if you're in any way affected by these type of mail shots, you can join the mail preferencing service by calling 0845 703 4599 and prevent many of them forever falling on your more vulnerable relatives and friends' doorsteps in the first place. More bad psychics news, and this time we go to Western Siberia, where a man has allegedly assaulted a psychic who predicted that he would do time in a public house and is also believed to have killed two witnesses in a bloody attack. After having his palm read by the psychic and it being predicted that he would do time in a public house, which can be interpreted as a prison, the angry nut was so dissatisfied with the results of his prediction that he hit the psychic with a knife, attempted to cut her throat, however thankfully she was able to get away, but it was alleged he then turned his anger onto two witnesses, stabbing them several times and both died from their injuries. Unbelievable! The man had been charged with attempted murder, and if found guilty he will face 20 years to life in prison. It's ironic that he ended up creating the very outcome he was so angry at the psychic suggesting might be the case in the first place. I mean, flippin' heck, you don't want to piss off a sitter at a psychic fair in Siberia. Still an example of why offering seemingly trivial pap as a reading doesn't take into account the effects or consequences it might have. More tales of violent acts and so-called psychic intervention this time, from a slightly less common angle, which brings me to Mr. Asbo, the terror-inducing swan that's been creating merry hell on the waterways of Cambridge. The swan, given the name Mr. Asbo by locals, has been carrying out a campaign of attacks and feathery fights for some time now, causing untold disruption and injury last year along the river, and has now started attacking people closer to the city. Locals and roars using the river are terrified of his aggressive ways and have called for the Queen to remove the swan under the impression that the Crown might not own the bird but can claim it and stop its destructive and violent ways. Cue the usual psychic meal ticket sniffer with her tuppence worth. Psychic Michelle Chidderley claims she had a Dr. Doolittle style chat to get him to ditch his aggressive ways and move on. She claims from talking to the swan she learned he was angry with humans after his cygnets were killed by a roar named Gonville last summer. Now she hopes to convince him to quit his home and leave river users in peace. She says, "My recommendation to him was that he migrates to somewhere outside the city. He's not really flavour of the month round here. He needed to be told what people were saying about him, and it hasn't been good. When I was communicating telepathically, first of all, he portrayed a feeling of fear and being quite angry with humans." What a crock. Why don't they just get in the animal experts and rescue workers, check the poor thing out for any underlying medical conditions that might be affecting its behaviour, then release him somewhere he isn't so likely to come across the public? Chidderley can't chat to him. It's a bleeding swan, and frankly, even if her claims that the swan is angry because its cygnets were killed were remotely true, I can't imagine a gentle coaxing from her would exactly help the poor bird in its rage anyway. It's more likely the poor thing is demented with lead poisoning or is simply pissed off with roars and screaming kids ruining its peace and quiet. Still, as long as Childerly's gabbing to the animals, she's at least not punting her trade to humans who can't understand her and are more likely than Mr. Asbo to take anything she says seriously. On to a little spook-centric news now, and it seems we're in the grips of an all-time high incidence of spectral sightings, according to the usual product publicising latest survey out this week, presided over by the holy roller biker of the bazaar and paranormal fan, Lionel Fanthorp. The Demonic Britain report was carried out for the latest DVD release of US TV series Supernatural, normally broadcast on the cable channel Living, so of course it had no agenda or bias. According to Fanthorp and the survey, there have been nearly 1,000 reports of demonic activity in the past quarter of a century, with Yorkshire the nation's most ghostly county. 1,000 reports of demonic activity. What were they calling in every time they watched Supernatural on TV or something? Didn't anyone tell them it's a drama, not a documentary? Encounters with devils, demons and evil spirits are as widespread today as they were in medieval times, researchers claim. I think that should read accounts of supposed encounters are as widespread, not actual documented evidence and proven encounters, since, well, they kind of haven't been proven to exist, have they? The study found that despite being in time of accelerating technology, 21st century Britons had not turned their back on the ghouls, boggarts, hellhounds, witches, wizards, banshees and black magic curses, with a whopping 968 reports of demonic activity in the past 25 years. Still, it shows that people still haven't moved on and learnt from all the science, information and alternative causes to consider available to them from medieval times. Still favouring the, I saw it, so it was real, and it was real cause I saw it, line of thought. Now I'm really depressed. The only thing demonstrated here is the love of having a fantasy, a myth, a bogeyman to believe in. Oh, and the ability to prefer the idea to the less mundane ones that might be the reason for the encounters. You know, the ones that point more towards sheer nuttery, folly or mistaken perception or far less demonic sources. Anyway, Lionel reckons the present human population is many times greater than it was in the past. Therefore, the more people there are, statistically, the more potential encounters there might be with these unpleasant non-human entities. Nah, Lionel. The more people there are, the more potential there is for them to do what gazillions of them have done in the past. Fallen for a belief in something that has no bias, basis or existence in fact or evidence, because it's far easier to blame a non-existence bogeyman as the source of a problem than tackle the real ones or look for the real reasons for what they think they have experienced. Now for a bit of wildly unsubstantiated and unlikely gossip that's been doing the rounds and seems about as likely to have any basis in truth as a politician's promise on election day. The internet highways and darkly lit byways have been aflutter with tale that the one and only Derica Cora may be returning to the screen and to Most Haunted. Now, those of you with a nose for this kind of thing will be aware that, how can I put it, Dexie and the Beatties didn't exactly part in the best of terms, and that the Beatties' lawyers were even called in after comments Dexie made about his time at Most Haunted on an internet radio show last year. Of course, they never took it any further, and Derica Cora stands by his comments. Cal Beattie has often made thinly veiled jibes at Cora when relating tales of unnamed psychics on his Unexplained Debate show, and well, let's not tiptoe around it here. It's pretty clear that he hates Cora's guts, and Dexie ain't fond of the Beattie Brigade either. So this latest rumour seems a highly unlikely circumstance to occur any time this side of, well, say, hell freezing over. The source of the rumour? Well, you might have guessed. The website promoting Acora's Australian tour, which along with the usual flower promotional jargon, and bumf, says, Derek hit international status when he became part of the international hit series Most Haunted. Rumours are currently abound that he will be returning to the show for a special Halloween Most Haunted live show. We will keep you posted in the news. Ah, so it's basically balls then. Or is it? Could Dexie swallow his pride for a quick buck in the one-off Halloween show? Could Beattie extend the fickle finger of fate and overlook practically everything he's said about Derek in the last few years, all for a showstopper of a clash? Nah, is my call on this. Not whilst Beattie's at the helm, and as for Dexie, what does he gain from reboarding a sinking ship? I'd say the likelihood of it happening is about as likely as Beattie dousing his Elvis collection in lighter fluid, flicking a match onto it and then dancing around it naked singing Long Live Kylie. Oh, and this just in. The word from Acora's Towers is Derek is certainly not going back to MH. Hell would freeze over before he'd work with Antics again. That settles that then. In more little psychic tidbits this week, it seems Acora's fellow UK psychic, Tony Stockwell's guides, didn't seem to be able to give him the heads up you might expect they would. A performance by the TV medium in Preston has been cancelled because he's been stranded abroad. The Living TV's answer to the Frank Spencer of the psychic world was due to bring his evening of mediumship to the Charter Theatre, but he's been caught by the flight restrictions after the Icelandic volcano. Funny how psychics never seem to be able to foresee highly unusual or unprecedented events like volcanic ash stranding them abroad. Mind you, Stockwell isn't alone there. I haven't seen one prediction by the psychic Glitterati, or even the Zedlusters out there, that could possibly hint at the biggest event this year so far. A quick bit of TV heads-up news, and Derren Brown is about to unleash a new three-part series that promises to provide some do-not-miss TV moments. It's called Derren Brown Investigates, and will air starting on the 10th of May on Channel 4. Set the recorders now, because from the trailer alone, it looks like it's going to be worth a second and a third watch. There are three documentaries. The first one with none other than the one, and thankfully the only, Joe Power, who is an endless source of material for Bad Psychics members, and I for one cannot wait to see Derren tackle his particular brand of psychic shenanigans head on, and from the look in Power's coupon in the trailer, it ain't going to be pretty. The second is with a ghost hunter from the US, and the third concerns a Russian system of human development that claims to cure blindness. Each is quite a different feel, apparently, and Derren says, I'm approaching each of the subjects with a wish for it all to be true, and for my reservations to be proved ungrounded. Show me the evidence, please convince me, is my attitude, not because I'm some arbiter of truth and falsehood, or that my opinion matters much in the world, but because I know how we can be taken in and fooled, what level and type of evidence is needed, and because to many, these are deeply important matters. There is much, much more on his thoughts and aims and ideas behind the show on his website, and I, for one, am really looking forward to the kind of show I was hoping Derren would turn his hand to after his event shows of the last while. On a more humorous slant, Mark Wootton has a new series on BBC Three, Tuesday at 10:30pm, called La La Land, and it takes Shirley Ghostman, his parody of the uncannily familiar dodgy psychic that enjoyed critical acclaim a few years back, to a new level, along with two new characters, all played to perfectly observed perfection by Wootton. The first episode sees Shirley Ghostman on the run from the police in the UK, where he's a wanted man for fraud, deception and hiring a hitman to take out a missing child he declared was dead, only for her to turn up exposing his con. I kid you not, Wootton is not taking any prisoners this time. It's not hard to see where his inspirations come from, as he takes Ghostman to LA where he meets with real people unaware he's a spoof. Think Ali G. Borat, including a publicist who, rather than balking at his revelations and lies, it was all going fine till that little bitch turned up, asks him if he really had a series on living, because that would give him a start. Unbelievable. It's brilliantly observed and achingly accurate in its portrayal of the kind of psychic charade you will be all too familiar with from witnessing the countless versions of Ghostmans out there on TV and in the newspaper stories. If you loved the Ghostman series the first time round, or if you've never seen it before, give it a watch, if nothing else, purely for the pastiche Ghostman character alone. Like every TV career psychic you ever knew was put into a blender, then reconstituted into one big uber fraud right before your eyes. Oh aye, and it is gut-hurtingly funny too. The reward for listening and subjecting your aching brain to further mental gymnastics that should never be demanded of a bank holiday is the one, the only, the now obligatory, no brain activity required, psychic celeb bit of fluff item. And this week's bit of celeb fluff with a love of the woo ways is Girls Aloud's very own bolshy one, Sarah, I drink bourbon, hear me roar, Harding. Yep, always keen to appear hardcore. Sarah apparently is as nutty as a jar of sunpat for anything spook-centric, and the Daily Star reported this week that she danced with death when a dabble with a Ouija board saw her party plunge into darkness. Talk about something kind of ooh. Danced with death. Who writes this shit? The nearest she's got to dancing with death was a casual shimmy past Amy Winehouse on the dance floor as she headed for the bogs at some Camden boat hole. A Ouija board dabbling seems like a walk in the park in comparison. The Daily Star goes on to spew forth in its usual sensationalist non-story style. The sexy songstress, 28, was game for a laugh when pals suggested a spooky late-night seance, but was left shaken to the core by a ghostly intervention. A source of the spine-tingling event said, "Sarah loves the paranormal, so she was really excited about calling up the spirits, and she was gagging for a go on the Ouija board. But when she and her mates joined hands and asked questions to summon the dead, a light bulb suddenly blew, making the room pitch black." A bulb blew. Is that it? It's hardly dabbling with death, is it? More a case of mildly entertaining the notion of investing in an energy-saving bulb, then kicking yourself for using a conventional one instead, really. Unless, of course, the light bulb was actually in her mouth, and she was dangling upside down, suspended over a pit of spikes with a rope soaked in petrol, as an evil minion reached for their Zippo lighter, threatening her with certain death at the flick of her thumb. I should really write for the Daily Star, come to think of it. Anyway, I digress. Sarah was quoted as saying, "I'm really interested in the supernatural. I wasn't scared of the Ouija board. I really enjoyed it." Which is quite hilarious for so many reasons, but mainly the fact that she was endlessly squealing, crying and running for the door when she appeared with her bandmates on Ghost Hunting With a few years back, coupled with a onlooker at this Ouija session of death, who was quoted in the same article as saying, "Everyone was so creeped out, no one could even talk. Then Sarah let out this blood-curdling scream. She was so freaked, she was literally shaking." If that's the nicker when a bulb blows, I'd hate to see the state she gets in when the toaster packs in unexpectedly or the central heating rumbles of a night. The laugh is, our interest in the paranormal seems to begin and end exclusively with squealing at her own shadow, paranoia that someone's watching her, and shoving a glass round the table after a few bevvies with a couple of mates. That's no paranormal. That's just any night for her than a Camden boozer. Anyway, funnily enough, the story was written for a bit of publicity around a premiere she attended for yet another paranormal-themed movie. So it's about as reliable as Sarah is in a power cut. This has been Fluff It for the Bank Holiday Bad Bulletin. Hope you enjoyed.
Check out the website at www.badcast.co.uk.